views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Larry Allen of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Larry speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now here's your host, Larry Allen.
Today's topic is the wonderful world of small business contracting. I've got a great guest to cover the what's going on in small business contracting today, including things from the practical as well as regulatory side. I think you're going to enjoy it. Before I introduce my guest, though, I want to remind you that it is time to run to the hills. No, it's time to run to the Coalition's website and register. Register for what? Register for the Fall Conference and the Excellence in Partnership Awards. Two annual events if you're in government contracting you simply can't afford to miss. Find out everything you need to know at thecgp.org. That's thecgp.org. Or call Melissa King at 202-331-0975, a name immortalized in radio history, even though Melissa herself does not want to come on the show. But thankfully for you, I do have someone today who does want to be on the show. He is Robert Topkins. Bob is a partner with the Washington, D.C. firm of Patton Boggs, where he specializes in government contract law and policy, and is also a specialist in small business government contracting. Bob Topkins, welcome to Off the Shelf.
Larry, thank you for having me here today, and thank you for giving some time to this important topic. It's one that's been a great deal of fun to work on, and it's remarkably complex, as you well know. So thanks for having a platform to talk about these issues today.
Bob Topkins is telling you it's fun. I should point out that here we are in the studio, and I can barely detect a trace of gray in Bob's hair. So he must, in fact, really find this fun, although it would make the rest of my hair fall out.
The lighting's a little dim.
So, Bob, small business contracting programs always get a lot of attention from elected officials as well as the press. But there's a tendency, I think anyway, to look at the entity called small business as a monolith, when in reality, there are competing interests and different perspectives. What's happening now in your experience that exemplifies these traits, and what do we need to share with our listeners?
Well, great points, Larry. Small business contracting tends to get a lot of lip service the closer you get to elections from politicians. But I have, in my experience, they tend to oversimplify the issues a lot of the time. You point out correctly that there is a lot of complexity, a lot of diversity within the different small business programs, and you need only look to the different programs that the SBA sponsors to see that. You have the 8A program, the HUB Zone program, the Service Disabled Veteran Owned program, Women Owned Small Business, all of which are by definition exclusionary. Only certain people that meet certain requirements and eligibility requirements can participate in those programs. So you have natural divisiveness and competition between the different small business programs. So it's by no means one big happy family of just good old generic small business. You also get disagreement as to who is a small business, just on the issue of size. What's the appropriate size standard to apply to a particular industry or to a particular procurement?
And that can be on employee size, dollar revenue.
That's exactly right.
And it varies by depending what type of business you're in, right?
That's exactly right. Typically, manufacturing industries tend to be defined by employee-based size standards. Those on the services side tend to be defined by revenue or receipts-based size standards. But there's a lot of question when you have particularly consolidated or bundled procurements about, well, is this really manufacturing or is it really services, and how do you make that decision? So there are a lot of nuances as to how size is defined, how it's defined for a particular procurement, and who meets the size threshold. There are also a lot of different approaches to business that small businesses of all different stripes and types might take. For instance, are they in the game to grow and ultimately become a large business, or are they content just going along as a small business and staying within the size standard? How much partnering do they want to do? Do they want to keep all of the work for themselves, or do they want or need a subcontracting partner to help them along or to help them grow their business? Should they take outside financing? One of the key issues that's permeated the small business world is, what is the impact of taking venture capital money or private equity money on a small business? business. And there's been a fairly tight interpretation of that by SBA, and that's disqualified a lot of companies from small business participation, the fact that they've taken VC or PE money. And that's a hot policy debate that's been underway for a number of years as to whether to loosen up a bit on that to facilitate more financing from private sources for small businesses.
And certainly also to expand out the definition of who qualifies as a small business. That's a tight topic right now, one that Congress is struggling with, one that the SBA is struggling with under some sort of mandate to redo the small business size standards. But there are always winners and losers when you do that, and the losers are the ones that can be quite vociferous.
Quite so. And in fact, when you look at the challenges to eligibility of companies, they typically come from other small businesses or from small businesses of a different stripe. There was a fairly well-discussed case called Rothy Development that was decided by the Federal Circuit Court of Appeals, one notch below the U.S. Supreme Court, that found the Small Disadvantaged Business Program to be unconstitutional. And the protagonist in that case, which started, by the way, more than a dozen years ago and finally was resolved in late 2008, the plaintiff in that case was a woman-owned small business out of Texas. So you had two different constituencies within the small business world fighting about the overall proprietariness of one particular program. And that very important court said the SDB program does not pass constitutional muster. So there's quite a lot of internecine warfare among small businesses.
Yeah, probably defined as overly broad and things of that nature. Bob, federal government has a 23% small business contracting goal. The government usually comes close. Some agencies exceed that. Other agencies don't quite get that far. Overall, it usually seems like they're off by a point, maybe a point and a half, which most people would actually use the term close enough for government work, but that's not the case here. What are some of the obstacles that prevent government from reaching that 23% goal?
Well, I think that's literally the $64 billion question, and I think I'm understating that by some degree. 23% of the overall federal procurement budget is an enormous amount of money. And I think there are quite a few things that stand in the way. The first high-level issue is that people don't appreciate how complex the small business procurement issues are. I think there's also a tendency to discuss them in glowing terms and embrace them and say, of course, we support small business. But nobody wants to accept the fact that if you're really going to increase small business participation, you have to spend more money on the administrative side of the government. If you want more small businesses, that means more contracting actions, which means more contracting officers, more work for those contracting officers. And that's just a fact. I don't think you can get around that. Now, ultimately, you might argue, and I think there's a good case to be made, that that investment ultimately benefits the government by bringing in more participants to the procurement world, more small businesses who in many cases are innovative and bring lower cost structures and ultimately increase competition in the federal marketplace. But there are a number of ways to look at this, and I could go on about this for quite a while, so you can tell me when we want to come back after the break.
Well, I want to come back and talk about some of the things that the government can do to garner small business participation. Bob, I thought your point was an interesting one, though, in terms of ramping up the number of people in the process on the government side. Recently, that was a recommendation of a president's small business panel, and also something you hear the Secretary of the Department of Defense talk a lot about in terms of ramping up his department's own acquisition workforce. So when we come back, I want to cover those issues with my guest today, Bob Tompkins. I'm Larry Allen, and you're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Throughout the history of American defense, Northrop Grumman has helped give the men and women of our military an edge with innovative design. Northrop Grumman delivered the products and systems that changed the course of battles and of wars. Today, our technology makes a difference in every domain: air, land, sea, space, and cyberspace. The people of Northrop Grumman build satellites, unmanned systems, electronic systems, information technology, as well as submarines and ships. We build the systems that give our troops a moment-by-moment picture of the battle space and a critical war-fighting advantage, along with shields from enemy threats. For 70 years, wherever the American military has served, Northrop Grumman has supported our nation's and our allies' defenses with the most advanced technology. Northrop Grumman, defining the future.
And welcome back to Off the Shelf, where I am Larry Allen, your host here every Tuesday at this exact time on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, where we bring you the undeceitfully loyal listener in the world of government procurement, the very latest developments in commercial solutions acquisition. We're talking this half hour to Bob Tompkins, Bob, a partner with the Washington firm of Patton Boggs. Our topic this half hour is small business. Before we get back to the conversation with Bob, though, I want to remind you, our listeners, that we welcome your feedback here on Off the Shelf, whether it's about small businesses or anything else. Do drop us a line if you have a question for my guest today, a suggestion for a show topic, or even something for me, your humble host. You know where to find us by now. We are at offtheshelf at federalnewsradio.com. That's offtheshelf at federalnewsradio.com. We always appreciate your feedback. As I mentioned, my guest is Bob Tompkins. Bob, we've been talking this half hour about small businesses. As we went into that first break, you're starting to talk a little bit about some of the hurdles that stand in the way of the government doing 23%, which is its government-wide goal of its contracting business with small businesses. And you mentioned some things about increasing the acquisitions workforce to break contracting into smaller pieces. What are some of the other things that are hurdles that are faced by small businesses and those who would do business with them to ramp up their participation in the federal market?
Larry, I think you can break down the issues into roughly four different subsets. We talked about one, which is the administrative side, which is the administration of federal procurement. The other three are, item number two would be, what are the supply side issues? How do you make sure that small businesses aren't being deterred from participating in the federal marketplace? The flip side of that is the demand side. How do you set up procurement such that they attract small businesses and attract them into the areas where they can be most beneficial to the government and have the best opportunity to grow? And then the fourth is the program integrity and the enforcement side of the house. These are very beneficial programs, but they also invite a lot of ineligible participants who are often trying to get their proverbial nose under the tent. In addition to the increase of the acquisition workforce, I think there's also a great need to cut down on the amount of administrative red tape that contractors of all sorts have to go through. And I think that will ultimately attract more small business participation. A great example of how that would work is the GSA Federal Supply Schedules Program, where small businesses are exceeding the 23% participation rate. And I think that's in large measure to the fact that the schedules are a relatively easy program to navigate and administer, at least once you're in the program and in the door. So utilizing more programs like that that have less red tape will help on the administrative side. On the supply side, we do a lot of things to deter everybody from the federal marketplace, and we seem to be doing more and more of that. There is a rash of anti-business, voyeuristic, envy-driven sentiment towards contractors out there that I hope will recede in the not-too-distant future, and I hope that contractors will be given their due appreciation for the valuable service they provide to our country. That said, we find a lot of small businesses who say, it's not worth it. It's not worth the headache to be a part of a process where I'm going to be demonized simply by the fact that I'm doing business with the government. So there's some attitudinal issues that I think need to be adjusted towards government contractors. And some of, in what my view are overreaching reporting requirements and information gathering exercises need to be revisited or viewed in a more thoughtful and objective way. One example in the context of the SBA, there are a rash of FOIA requests out there asking for the full files of many 8A companies, which include their business plans, the compensation of all of their officers and employees, the things that were in their application that discuss their qualifications, how much are they paying their marketing and BD folks, basically saying, raise your skirts completely to the world so we can see how you run your business by virtue of the fact that you're in the 8A program. That's going to create an enormous impediment to participation in 8A, in the 8A program and 8A contracting if the SBA allows those data points to be released. So that's a big supply side problem. Let's make it less, let's remove the inhibitors to participation.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I think those are good points. Today, as you have a government market, particularly as we cover here on Off the Shelf Commercial Solutions Acquisition, where there are more and more government-specific mandates. I don't know about Bob, but I unfortunately have been around long enough to remember when it wasn't always this case. But there do seem to be a lot of new rules. And whether I think your point, Bob, about the 8A program is an excellent specific point about the type of kimono opening that is expected of you if you're doing government business, and yet there are very real reasons why companies need to keep proprietary data private and why that's not really going to harm the government's interest in having open and transparent procurement. You just don't need to know everything, and sometimes, you know, as careful as the government is with information, other people see it who shouldn't be. Let's switch up gears and talk specifically about one government small business program right now. That's the HubZone program. Two recent court decisions, problematically, in many people's views, have given the HubZone program a business edge in government acquisition, making it the preferred socioeconomic small business program today. That's causing a rift in small businesses, isn't it, Bob? And it's also a dilemma in government procurement, among government procurement professionals. Do you think Congress intended for this, and is there a way out of it?
Well, those are all excellent questions and questions that are being asked on a repeated and regular basis. This has been a fascinating issue from a lawyer's perspective. The basic issue for listeners who may not be completely familiar with the HubZone program, it's a geographic-based program, whereas the other programs tend to be focused on the characteristics of the individual owners, whether they're minority or women or service-disabled vets. The HubZone program came about in the mid-1990s, and it basically sets up a program where companies that are located in distressed economic areas and which hire a certain proportion of their employees from within those areas get a special procurement break. And what's come to light in the last 2+ years or so is some quirky wording in the statute that created the HubZone program, where basically the statute says a contracting opportunity shall be awarded to HubZones if there are two or more out there that look like they could do the job at a fair market price. That shall term has been read by a number of different litigants to basically say, the HubZone program trumps all of the other programs, because such as 8A, Service Disabled Vet, because those programs contain a more permissive word, may, in terms of defining when those types of contracting actions can be used. So about 2 years ago, in the fall of 2008, the Government Accountability Office, GAO, which hears bid protests, ruled in a protest that the HubZone program trumps the SDVO program based on that issue. In May of 2009, a protester came forward and raised the same issue vis-a-vis the 8A program and said, HubZone has the word shall, 8A has the word may. This the procurement that had been put into the 8A program needs to be backed out and put into HubZone. GAO agreed with the protester in both of those cases and said, yes, HubZone by the plain letter of the law trumps 8A. So then some interesting things started to happen. The federal government and the SBA in particular, which has an entire set of regulations that are set up around the concept of parity between the small business programs, basically thumbed their nose at GAO. They said, GAO, we don't have to listen to you.
So, and so now we find ourselves in the situation where HubZones have a temporary, perhaps not so temporary, supra status in government acquisition, even though the same GAO that Bob referenced came out a couple of years ago and showed that a lot of companies that claim to be HubZones really aren't. So following along at home, that should be perfectly clear. When we come back, I want to finish talking about HubZones with my guest today, Bob Tompkins, as well as some sweeping rules that are pending at the SBA that would impact all types of small business programs. I'm Larry Allen, and you're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
What does the future of government contracting hold for your company's business? How will you grow your federal sales in a tight market? What new rules could directly impact your current contracts? Get the answers to these questions and more at the Coalition for Government Procurement's Fall Conference, featuring Senator Claire McCaskill, Chair of the Senate Special Subcommittee on Contracting, FAS Commissioner Steve Kemp, senior executives from OMB, and more. The Fall Conference is the best place to get the critical information your company must have to stay ahead in the federal market. The Fall Conference is November 1st and 2nd at the McLean Hilton. Federal business professionals just like you say they get the vital information at the Coalition's Fall Conference that they simply don't get anywhere else. Don't miss this once-a-year event. Call the Coalition today at 202-331-0975. That's 202-331-0975 to make sure your seat is reserved for the fall conference, the must-attend event for government contractors.
And we're back here on Off the Shelf, where I am Larry Allen, the president of the Coalition for Government Procurement, and your host here every week at this exact time, where we bring you the undefatigably loyal listener in business and industry, the very latest developments in the world of commercial solutions procurement. We're talking this half hour to Bob Tompkins. Bob, partner with the law firm of Patton Boggs, and our subject this half hour is small business contracting. Bob, I want to jump right back in because it's an interesting conversation we're having. As we went into that last break, you were talking a little bit about the current status of the Hub Zone program. Hub Zone, historically underutilized business zone, and the fact that it has a kind of a super preference now among socioeconomic programs. Give us the very latest status on where we are. You had said that the government, despite some court rulings, was not following along with that. Congress getting into the act, do we expect a change here? What's the latest?
Well, you know, the protester in that GAO case, after the government thumbed their nose at the GAO, did what any logical protester would do, which is to go to another court that actually has injunctive power. So they went to the Court of Federal Claims, which agreed with the GAO's interpretation of the law, and they issued an injunction, and they said no more of this on this particular contract anyway. The federal government thumbed their nose at the Court of Federal Claims, and they said that case only applies to that particular contract, and they've issued a directive from OMB that says to the procuring agencies, you're to treat these small business programs in a matter of parity, or to give them each equal consideration. One does not trump the other. So they've continued to thumb their nose, and they've also appealed the Court of Federal Claims case to the Federal Circuit. I will say that I think there's been a bit of oversimplification in this case. The SBA made some very compelling arguments that there's some language elsewhere within the Hub Zone Act that says, notwithstanding any other provision of law, the Hub Zone program shall be used. SBA, I think, has a very good argument that that means any other provision of law other than the Small Business Act, which encompasses all the other 8A programs. So far, nobody's agreed with them on the judiciary side of this, but who knows? Two things are likely to happen. One, either the Federal Circuit will come back and disagree with the Court of Federal Claims. Who knows how long that will take? There have been discussions on the Hill, and there's been some legislation introduced, but it doesn't seem to be moving very fast, that would correct this issue and make it clear from a statutory perspective that parity is the rule of the game. But nothing yet.
Nothing yet. So stay tuned. And in the meantime, if you're a Hub Zone or want to do business with one, then you may have a potential leg up, although it sounds like you would have to litigate it and press the point. As I mentioned as a teaser going into that last break, Bob Tompkins, my guest today, the Small Business Administration itself is currently reviewing comments on sweeping set of proposed changes to various small business contracting rules. Included in these are limitations on pass-through work, Alaska Native contracts, and other rules. Basically, the bottom line, Bob, is they're intended to make sure, at least according to the SBA, that small businesses, true small businesses, are the ones that are getting the business when the government goes that way. What are some of the most significant changes in this rule? Where is it today? What's the future?
Well, let's start with the process. The rule was announced in late October of 2009, and the comments were received in early 2010. So the prognostications are that the final rule will likely come out sometime in the fall of this year. I personally think it may slip a little bit because there are always bureaucratic hurdles that have to be cleared. But I'd say it's a safe bet to say by year end, we should be seeing a new rule that's final or coming very close. There are a number of interesting things about the rulemaking itself. And one, SBA clarifies in the rulemaking that they're actually clarifying their own regulations in many of these, quote, proposed changes. So savvy contractors would be well served to actually read the proposed rulemaking and make note of those issues where SBA says we're changing the wording of the regulations to, quote, clarify how we interpret the regs. So I would say, in effect, roughly 80% of what is in that, quote, proposed rule is really the rule of the land right now, at least as far as SBA views it. The changes are many. There are dozens and dozens of changes. But to highlight a few, one of the overarching goals of the rulemaking is to make sure that the benefits of these programs are going to the participants themselves and not to outside actors, whether they might be minority owners, or large businesses that partner with small business, subcontractors, for example. And so they've really tightened up on the mentor-protege program participation. One of the important things that they did, which I think caught a lot of people off guard, is they've taken the position that only the SBA's own mentor-protege program gives coverage from what's called affiliation between the mentor and the protege. And they've admitted that any other mentor-protege program whose authorizing statute gives that affiliation exception would preserve that as well. But there are an awful lot of mentor-protege programs that are administered by other procuring agencies that are not subject to that exception, but which many of the proteges and their mentors have assumed are. So I think folks who are in mentor-protege programs other than the SBAs need to be paying very close attention to how this rule, when it becomes final, will affect their small business status. The proposed rules would also define more clearly and more narrowly how much can a mentor participate in the business of an 8A company, particularly through joint venturing and through subcontracting from the 8A company on 8A contracts. It would expand or at least clarify on the SBA's ability to take enforcement action against mentors and other large businesses that are participating with 8As and small businesses, including making it much more clear that the SBA can initiate administrative proceedings such as suspension and debarment proceedings against large businesses or otherwise ineligible entities or persons who are trying to exploit the SBA's programs, in particular 8A. And we're seeing some practical movement in that area in our practice as well, where they're really throwing the book at folks who are exploiting these programs. I think for a long time there was a common misperception among non-eligible folks that they could just come in and play as much as they wanted in the small business realm, and if they got caught, so be it, but nothing bad would happen. And I think there's a sea shift that's underway where folks who engage in that type of activity are at significant risk, and I think that's a good thing that they are called to account.
Well, certainly people like you and I who want integrity of the procurement process, if you're small, you're small. If you're not small, you shouldn't be saying that you're small. And ultimately, while you can comment and petition the SBA, once they come up with the rules, they are their rules to come up with. Bob, very quickly, one of the things we haven't touched on yet is the seeming anomaly between competing government contract goals. Strategic sourcing on one end, which seems to suggest bundling all the government's procurements into one or fewer, which would be perhaps anti-small business, and then the anti-bundling movement on the other side, which would break things apart. If I'm a contracting officer, how do I decide?
I think the first issue is to recognize that you have a problem. You have competing goals. Acceptance is an important part of this process. As we were talking about very early on in the show, I think there's a tendency to oversimplify small business issues and not take into account and be realistic about the added costs that may come with them, at least initially. So I think recognizing that these are, in fact, perhaps competing propositions is important. I do think that in the long run, the investment that is made in establishing processes for small businesses to participate will ultimately help with things like strategic sourcing. There's some good examples of BPAs, blanket purchase agreements, and other vehicles that have been set aside for small businesses to engage in repetitive ordering and acquisition that I think are showing some fruit now and showing that that trade-off can actually work out well over time.
So competing interests today, but perhaps some hope for the future. Bob Tompkins, my guest today. Bob is a partner with the Washington firm of Patton & Boggs. Bob, I want to thank you so much for being today, being on Off the Shelf today.
Larry, it's always a pleasure to see you, and thank you for having me.
Yeah, you've been a great guest. You are our dismissed subject to the call of the chair. And for my regular listeners, I want to thank you for, even if you're not so regular, I want to thank you for tuning in this afternoon on Off the Shelf, or this morning on Off the Shelf. I'm Larry Allen.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Larry Allen of the Coalition for Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, Tuesday mornings at 10:30, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. WFED, your source for federal news now.
WFED Washington.